movie. It's called City Slickers. And it's a gentleman who goes through a bit of a midlife crisis because life isn't working out like he hoped. If you haven't gotten there yet, you will. Life doesn't always go as planned. This year we're going through the 66 books of the Bible, and we have begun clear back in January looking at the first five books, the Pentateuch, and we began as Moses did with "In the beginning God created," and we walked along as we came for the last several months to these 12 historical books as we tracked Israel through its ups and downs, but more downs than ups. We're going to, at the end of the month, tackle the books of the prophets and hopefully end with the minor prophets this year. But we find ourselves in these five little books. Oftentimes, if you look at the bookcase, it's called the books of poetry. I would prefer to call them the books of wisdom. If you were here a couple weeks ago, we began back with the book of Job. And the book of Job really tackles that question of how do we live when life stinks? Job lost everything. He lost his children, his possessions, his health. He lost everything. How can you live when life stinks? We then went to the book of Psalms, and Psalms, I'm guessing, is many of our favorite book because it is this incredible testimony to how you and I can interact with God. It doesn't matter your emotional state. If you're joyful, there's this psalm to express your joy to God. If you're discouraged, there are psalms to guide you through what to do with that distress. If you're bewildered, where is God? There's a psalm for that. Last week, we were in the book of Proverbs, and Proverbs really tackles the question of how do I live with you? How do I interact with the people around me? How do I interact with my wife, with my children? How do I interact at work? How do I live the life that God has given me? Next week, we're going to tackle maybe the most difficult book to do on a Sunday morning. What exactly is the role of marriage love? But this morning, we come to what I would suggest is the most discouraging book in the entire Old Testament. Maybe the Bible. Because the book of Ecclesiastes is going to be this incredible pursuit for meaning. How do we find meaning in this life? Well, the author in chapter 1 introduces it this way. "Meaningless, meaningless," says the teacher. "Utterly meaningless. Everything is meaningless. Does a man gain from all his labor at which he toils under the sun? Generations come, generations go, but the earth remains forever. The sun rises and sets, and then hurries back where it rises. The wind blows to the south, and then it turns to the north. Round and round it goes, ever returning on its course. All streams flow into the sea, yet the sea is never full. To the place the streams come from, they return again. All things are wearisome. More than one can say, the eye never has enough of seeing. The ear is, it's full of hearing. What has been will be again. What has been done will be done again. There is nothing new under the sun. Is there anything of which one can say, look, there's something new? It's already long ago. It was here before our time. There is no remembrance of men of old. And even those who are yet to come will not be remembered by those who follow." I very quickly want to suggest that we're going to try and tackle the book of Ecclesiastes. We're going to not spend a lot of time in that middle section because Solomon, or the author anyway, is going to try and share with his understanding of life. But I did want to begin with his introduction. What does the word meaningless mean? If you have an ESV, your ESV might translate it vanity, but I have to be honest, the vanity, isn't that something that you have in the bathroom, or isn't that somebody who looks too often in the mirror in the bathroom? I don't really know what that means. So what exactly does meaningless mean? Well, I have been encouraging you, and I hope you're doing it, taking the Bible Project videos. A group out in Portland has tackled every single one of the 66 books of the Bible, and in 5 to 10 minutes try and gives you an overview. But now that they are done, they're going back and they're tackling some questions, like what does the word meaningless mean?
tied together all of these disturbing ideas. Nearly 40 times he says that everything in life is hevel. It's a Hebrew word that means smoke or vapor. Like smoke, life is beautiful and mysterious.
It takes one shape, and before you know it, it takes a new shape.
And smoke looks solid, but try and grab it, it'll slip right through your fingers.
And when you're stuck in the thick of it, like fog, it's impossible to see clearly.
Now, our modern translations have lost the metaphor, and they usually translate hevel as meaningless. But if you read closely, the critic isn't saying that life has no meaning, but rather that its meaning is never clear. Like smoke, life is confusing, it's disorienting and uncontrollable.
I would suggest that the word really has two primary characteristics. It's that life is fleeting. I think many of you, if not most of you, realize that my oldest daughter is getting married in a little over a month. And I can still remember sitting downstairs at the church. You all were kind enough to give us a shower when she was 7 days old when we brought her from the Twin Cities. And several of you came up to me and made the comment, enjoy these days. They'll go by faster than you can imagine. And maybe you can remember, if you have children, when somebody told you that, and your thought is, yeah, that's really nice to say. You're not the one standing up every night. Well, neither was I. That was Renee. But you get the idea. You think, okay, I understand. And now I look back and wonder, where did 21 years go? It's just gone. It seems like a moment, and that moment is just so fast. Whether you get 70, 80, 100 years, they're just over. But what's even worse is life is confusing at best. It's perplexing. It's even a bit frustrating. I love that image of vapor. Do you remember as a child laying out and looking at the clouds and doing that experiment that every child does? Oh, look, there's a bunny. Oh, wait, no, it's not a bunny, it's a sailboat. Oh, wait, no, it's not a sailboat, it's a castle. It just shifts and it changes and it just morphs from one thing into the next. And as soon as you think you've got it figured out, it doesn't make sense anymore. Maybe meaningless isn't the best word, but this whole idea that life flashes before our eyes and I can never quite figure it out. If you look at it from the book of Ecclesiastes. In fact, if you continue down in verse number 3, he's going to add to this whole meaningless, what does a man gain from all his labor at which he toils under the sun? The whole book of Ecclesiastes, or at least the bulk of the book, is going to be written from a human perspective. How do I make sense of this physical world that we live in? How do I figure it out if all I get is what's under the sun? But there's one more really important part of the introduction. And that is, who exactly is this teacher? If you have an ESV, it's called preacher. I don't know if you realize this or not, but the book of Ecclesiastes gets its name from this word, which is the very same word that we get the word church from. The word literally has the idea of gathering. Just as this morning, we are not in our physical building that oftentimes we get called the church. We're still very much the church because we've gathered. And the idea seems to be that the one writing has gathered people together to impart his wisdom. Well, who's the teacher? There's been a lot of discussion as to exactly who he is. In verse number 1 says that he's the son of David, king in Jerusalem. Well, there were 20 plus people who were kings and sons of David. In verse number 12, he's going to narrow it down a little bit more. He's going to say, I was the king over Israel in Jerusalem. Well, there's only one king who was the son of David, who reigned over all of Israel from Jerusalem. Solomon. Why is that important? Well, the major section, beginning in the end of chapter 1 and through the beginning of chapter 12, the author, the teacher, is going to explore life. And he's going to explore it in two sections. The first section, he's going to share those things that he's experienced. Assuming that it's Solomon, and I'm going to, that presents Solomon with an advantage that you don't have. I don't have. Be honest, have you ever made that statement? I'm sure I would be satisfied if. This past Thursday, I was in the shower when my wife stuck her head in the bathroom and said, I have some bad news. Your dad had a heart attack. My dad has had a couple heart attacks over the years, and so I got out. We'd had a meeting Wednesday night. I put my phone on silent. Sure enough, my sister had called at 6 in the morning. I had missed it. So I threw on some clothes, and I said to Renee, I need to go to the Twin Cities. She agreed, but even though we have 4 cars in my house, we have 6 drivers. On this particular morning, one of the 4 cars was in the shop, so it wasn't drivable. One of the cars was in Cedar Rapids. One of them had left early to come here, and so we were down to 1 car. Well, my wife needed to go see her mom. She had some errands. She needed to run for her mom. And so I said, well, let's drive to Ankeny. I'll rent a car. So we got in the car. We headed out and called all of the places in Ankeny that rents cars, and none of them had cars. They said, the only place you can get a car is the Des Moines Airport. Well, I didn't really want to go there. It's about 45 minutes out of the way, but okay, we'll go to the airport. I rented a car, said goodbye to my wife, drove to the Twin Cities, spent the afternoon with my dad. They had put 3 stents in his heart. He is doing okay, still in the hospital. I'm probably going to be heading up there later this afternoon. But I had to return the car by 9 o'clock the next morning. I didn't really want to get up and get to Des Moines by 9, so they said I had till midnight to get it there. So I drove it back to the airport and pulled in about a little after 11. And I had to check it in right by the baggage claim. And I'm sure none of you have ever done this, but my mind starts to wander back to my 20s. I used to travel all the time when I was in my 20s. I had the chance literally to see the world. It was so much fun. I don't know what in the world families were doing out at 11 o'clock at night, but there was a bunch of them getting their baggage. And I started to think, you know, it would be so much fun just to jump on a plane and fly away. But I can't. I got responsibilities. I don't have the resources. That never was a problem for Solomon. We're going to see in a second. Anything his eyes saw, he had the resources to try. He tried everything. But not only did he have the resources, if I decided for the next 20 years, I'm going to dedicate my life to figuring out the meaning of life. I'm going to study all of the philosophies the world has, and then I'm going to write the quintessential meaning of life book. You wouldn't read it. Because who am I? I'm a nobody. I'm not a world-class intellect. I'm not one of the great thinkers of this generation or any other generations. It's not true of Solomon. Listen to the way Solomon is described in 1 Kings chapter 3. God gave Solomon wisdom and very great insight and a breadth of understanding as measureless as the sand on the seashore. Solomon's wisdom was greater than the wisdom of all the men of the east and greater than all the wisdom of Egypt. He was wiser than any other man. He described plant life from the cedars of Lebanon to the hyssop that grows out of the walls. He taught about animals and birds and reptiles and fish. Men of all nations came to listen to Solomon's wisdom, sent by all the kings of the world who had heard of his wisdom. There has never been a wiser man, and some would argue a richer man, than Solomon. If anybody could experience and process through the thoughts, it was Solomon. And so Solomon takes us on this journey. What is the meaning of life? What can we find from life? Well, he begins in chapter 1 by addressing the subject of learning. We live in a society that is consumed with the pursuit of education. I'm sure you've heard, education will open the doors that you need to have a meaningful life. Now please don't misunderstand me. I've spent as much time in school as probably anybody in this room and have lots of degrees. I would love to go get more degrees. But education will not provide for you the meaning of life. If you go back, you can study the Western European history, and you'll find that around the 15th, 16th century, we moved into a new era. It was called the modern era. It was the era of science. It was this understanding that we could solve the world's problems with our intellect. The scientific method was invented, and science began to tackle many of the questions, many of the struggles, many of the problems. And you and I live in an incredible era. We have air conditioning for days like today. We have running water for a few minutes when you need a drink or use the restroom. We have the ability to be able to talk literally to anybody on the planet and see them in real time. But about two decades ago, there began to be some new thoughts. Science is awesome. Modern thinking is wonderful. But you know what it hasn't done? Hasn't answered the big questions. The question of why am I here? Where am I going? What is the meaning of life? In fact, we are entering into what is called by many philosophers a postmodern era. And what that means is I'll take the technology. But let's be honest, there's no such thing as truth. What works for you, great. Just don't make it work for me. We can't ever really know. Listen to what Solomon says. I, the teacher, was king over Israel and Jerusalem. I devoted myself to study and to explore by the wisdom all that is done under the heaven. What a heavy burden God has laid on men. I've seen all the things that are done under the sun. All of them are meaningless. Chasing after the wind. What is twisted can't be straightened. What is lacking cannot be counted. I thought to myself, look, I have grown and increased in wisdom more than anyone who has ruled over Jerusalem before me. I've experienced much of wisdom and knowledge. Then I applied myself to understanding of wisdom, and also of madness and of folly. But I learned that this too is a chasing after the wind. That's an image that he will use often in the book. And I don't know if you've thought much about chasing after the wind. But you want to talk about a futile endeavor. First of all, I'm not sure you could catch the wind. But if you did, what would you have? Talk about meaningless. Solomon says, no. Learning, education, that's not the solution to our problems. I know what the solution is. It's pleasure. If there's any truly American philosophy, we just celebrated the 4th of July not too long ago, and in our founding documents we have that you have certain inalienable rights, the right to life, the right to liberty, and the right to pursue happiness. Okay, what kind of happiness would you pursue? Well, Solomon is going to, in chapter 2, say, I thought in my heart, come now, I will test you with pleasure to find out what is good, but also prove to be meaningless. So let's start with comedy. We have as one of the largest genres of television, the sitcom. The sitcom is the situational comedy. It is this belief system that if you sit down for half an hour and watch television, you'll forget all your problems. It's a multi-million-dollar industry. We have comedy clubs all across America that you could tonight go and listen to some guy stand up like me, only tell much better jokes than I will tell. On Friday night, Larissa and Abby were home, and when I got in, they were watching some romance movie, and so I thought, I'm not really interested. I went back to my room and was doing some studying and other things, and then I started to hear some laughter. I thought, I wonder what that is. They were watching the movie Get Smart. I don't know if you've seen it, but it's a remake of, I don't even know when Get Smart was on, the 60s, 70s, and it was just pure stupidity of slapstick. But for the next hour, I laughed. If you can laugh, you'll have fine meaning, right? Nope. Okay, if laughter doesn't work, how about alcohol? I know that many in our society have concluded that it's not a party if alcohol's not involved. Maybe some of you think that. If I can just get something to take the edge off life, and just for a few moments, forget. Americans spent $72 billion last year on alcohol. It doesn't work. Solomon tried it. Oh, okay, I know what I'm going to suggest. I'm going to build amazing structures. My line of work doesn't always have that great sense of accomplishment of finishing something. It just seems like it goes on and on and on. But some of you have the privilege of doing a job where you can walk away and say, I built that. I've done that a few times. And that might be the mix of comedy if you saw what I built. But there's still a sense of enjoyment and fun. I did that. That's me. I did that. But those of you who are in construction, there's another house to build. There's another building to build. The rest of your life will be spent in building the next thing. Solomon says that I built houses for myself. I planted vineyards. I made gardens and parks and planted all kinds of fruit trees in them. I made reservoirs to water the groves of the flourishing trees. I tried everything. I built more than you will ever build. And when I was done, I looked at it and said, that doesn't feel very good. Okay, I know what we need. We need some slaves. Okay, today we don't use that term. We use the term servants. I spent a year in India, and the city that I lived in was Bangalore. It was about 3,000 feet elevation, just high enough to take a lot of the heat off to get rid of the humidity. And it was called the Retirement Center of India. Now, the people who retired there might not have been the ones you thought. There were a lot of British people who retired there. See, what happened is the British people who were either military officers or somehow involved in the government lived in India, retired, and went back to England and found out they'd actually have to do things for themselves. They can't afford 12 or 15 servants. So they moved back so they would never have to do another thing the rest of their life. From the beginning of the morning when your breakfast was served to you in bed and your clothes were laid out for you and the house was cleaned, everything was taken care of. Solomon says, I tried that. That doesn't help. Okay, well then maybe I will amass silver and gold. I'm guessing some of you have in the back of your mind this thought, if I just had a little bit more, everything would be better. John D. Rockefeller is still probably the richest American who's ever lived. If you look at inflation-adjusted numbers, he was the first American to reach $1 billion. And at the end of his life, he was interviewed by a newspaper reporter who asked this question. How much money does it take to be content? His answer, just one more dollar. Okay, some of you love music. Imagine if, okay, you don't have the iPhone, you don't have iTunes, you don't have YouTube, but any musical band you want, you bring them in and they play live for you. Solomon listened to music regularly. Anybody he wanted to listen to, he brought them in. Sex. Let's be honest. That's where the true fulfillment is found. Imagine if every attractive woman you saw, you could sleep with. Solomon had 1,000 brides and concubines. I'm going to go out on the limb and say almost every single attractive young lady in Jerusalem was his. And it just didn't help. In fact, he's going to say, I became greater by far than anyone in Jerusalem before me. In all of this, my wisdom stayed with me. And he says, I denied myself nothing my eyes desired. Think about that statement just for a second. I never once said no. Something I want to eat, I ate it. Something I wanted to do, I did it. Something I wanted to buy, I bought it. Something I wanted to accomplish, I did it. Not once did I ever say no. I refused my heart, no pleasure. My heart took delight in all my work, and this was the reward for all of my labor. Yet when I surveyed all that my hands had done, what I had toiled to achieve, everything was meaningless. Chasing after the wind. Nothing was gained under the sun. Okay, work. Work is where you'll find meaning, right? Nobody works more than Americans. If you look at the average work schedule, we as Americans blow the rest of the world away. We love work. We work all the time. Solomon's going to say that doesn't provide it. In fact, in chapter 9, he's going to tackle a subject that I think if I'm honest, I would have said, well, this is where you find your meaning, right? In religion, in church. I mean, after all, I invited all of you to come out here and sing praises and listen to me speak. Well, religion must be the answer, right? Solomon says in chapter 9, "So I reflected on all of this and concluded that the righteous and the wise and what they do are in God's hands, but no man knows whether love or hate awaits him. All share a common desire, the righteous and the wicked, the good and the bad, the clean and the unclean, those who offer sacrifices and those who do not. As it is with the good man, so with the sinners. As it is with those who take oaths, so with those who are afraid to take them." Solomon says, you can go to church every single day the rest of your life, and you know what's going to happen? You're going to die. You're going to be buried, and everybody's going to forget you. My wife and I have been walking most evenings, and if it hasn't rained or if we get started early enough and the sun's still up, we have been walking through the cemetery in Victor. And it is interesting to walk by all of the tombstones and to realize how many names I've never heard of. If the Lord should tarry 100 years from now, your name's going to be on one of those tombstones and somebody's going to walk by and say, "Andrews? Never heard of that name. Wonder who he was. Wonder what he did." It doesn't matter. What's the next? If we were to close here, this would be the most discouraging sermon I've ever given. And yet, this is where our world is. It's all meaningless. You can pursue anything you want under the sun, and in the end, you're going to die and be forgotten. Lovely thought. So what's the hope? What's the point? What's the meaning? Well, Solomon gives us a bit of a hint. In fact, as you go through it, you'll see in chapter 2, he gives you a little hint. "This too I see is from the hand of God. God gives wisdom, knowledge, and happiness." In chapter 3, "God will bring judgment. As for men, God tests them." In chapter 5, "The few days of life God has given him." I know that sometimes I can be a little bit too much of a geek, and so please forgive me if this makes no sense to you. But we live in a world in which encryption is a huge thing. And I was doing a little studying on a keyword cipher. I don't know if you've ever heard of that, but a keyword cipher is one of the more common ways to disguise your information. Is you take the alphabet, you choose a word, and you put it anywhere in the middle of the alphabet, and it shifts all the letters over so that when you write a code, the person reading it can't figure it out unless they have the keyword. And the keyword changes everything. Solomon says, "Now all has been heard. Here's the conclusion of the matter. Fear God. Fear God. Fear God and keep his commandments. For this is the whole duty of man. For God will bring every deed into judgment, including every hidden thing, whether it is good or evil." The key word cipher that makes everything different is God and eternity. He said back in chapter 3 that God will bring every word into judgment. But in chapter 3, he said that inside of every human being, whether you want to recognize it or not, whether you want to admit it or not, you realize there's something more than this world. That there is an eternity. I don't know what it looks like. I don't really understand it. I can't figure it out on my own. But I know there has to be more. But that more only begins when we see God. I don't know how long you've had a chance to kind of look around here this morning. Camp every single year comes up with a theme. The theme for this year's camp is taken from John chapter 1. And in John's account, he shares with us at the very beginning that in the beginning was the Word. And the Word was with God, and the Word was God. He was in the beginning with God. All things made through Him, and without Him was not anything made that was made. In Him was life, and that life was the light of men. The light shines in darkness, and the darkness cannot overcome it. See, the problem is that we're living in utter darkness. We're trying to figure out life with our eyes closed and unable to see. The only way life will ever make sense is for a light to be turned on. And that light was turned on when some 2,000 years ago, God decided to come. He decided to take on human form, to live amongst us, to face the meaninglessness of this life under the sun, just like you face. And yet, as He faced the sorrow, the discouragement, the pain, His life provided light. John continues, the true light, which gives light to everyone, was coming into the world. He was in the world, and the world was made through Him. Yet the world did not know Him. He came to His own, and His own people, they didn't receive Him. But to all who do receive Him, for everyone who recognizes that life will never make sense apart from Jesus, who came and lived a perfect life so that He could die a sacrificial death for you, so that you can stop trying to find meaning, trying to acquire meaning, and simply believe. The only thing that will ever make life make sense is Jesus. But to all who did receive Him, who believed in His name, He gave the right to become the children of God, who were born not of blood, nor of the will of the flesh, nor of the will of man, but of God. The only way to make sense of Ecclesiastes and this life is through the eyes of Jesus. I don't know where you're at this morning. I suspect there are some who are struggling with meaning. Why did this happen to me? Why do I have to go through that? Why doesn't this fulfill? It won't. The only meaning of life is Christ. I hope that you have believed. Father, I thank You for the chance to be here this morning. I thank You for all of the things that we will do later today, for the food that we will eat downstairs, for the fun that we will have on the campground. God, I thank You for the chance to pursue fun. But God, I do pray that in the quietness of this moment that we would honestly examine our hearts and truthfully ask, are we seeking for pleasure in this world, or are we seeking for it in You? God, I pray that You would help us to receive that light that makes the world understandable and guarantees an eternity in Your presence, not because we deserve it or earned it, but because You are an amazingly loving God. Thank You for the chance to be here today. For it is in Jesus' name we pray. Amen. I do want to thank you for coming. There is some food downstairs. I think it's close to ready. Stick around and eat, and then enjoy camp. Thank you very much for coming.